can make you do it. Makes us all the better, faster, stronger.
Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right. Comes back to the left. Going long for Gordon. He's out there and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5.
Unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown.
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
Welcome to a Football Monday. Vic and Nathan with you to talk some Browns ball. So much to talk about after a weekend in which this team added yet another player, methodically adding pieces to the puzzle, the latest being that of Ben Tate, running back. I think it's a really good signing. I like that signing a lot.
First of all, it's great to have you back here beside me in the Dog Bowl Notorious.
Great to be back, yes.
And, I think it's a great signing with Ben Tate, talking about a guy who is familiar with the type of offense and running game that Kyle Shanahan likes to implement.
Yeah.
He's run in the similar system down in Houston, averaged 4.7 yards per carry over the last 3 years, number 9 in the NFL in that stat, about a half yard better than his teammate Arian Foster. And what I like about him the most, and by the way, he's quickly becoming one of the most popular Browns on Twitter, is clearly he wants to be here. He's fired up to be here. He's embraced the fans. He's embracing the city. Ben Tate is here to become. He sees this as his opportunity. It's one of those marriages where the Browns had a big need. This is his opportunity. The contract situation worked out. It's a two-year deal. We don't know the exact money yet, but two-year deal. The reports are that it's around $7 million, a great price for a guy who could become a big-time difference maker in this offense.
I was happy that they did this signing the way they did this signing because, number one, you do have a player who fits very well what you want to do. The Browns will conform their offense and defensive schemes to the players they have, but in the case of Ben Tate, it's obvious that the Kyle Shanahan running game is ideal for this guy. It's what he's done, and he's done at least a form of it. And I think in talking with him over the weekend, he indicated that that is something that is going to work well for him because of his exposure to it in Houston with Gary Kubiak's very similar zone running scheme. So we'll talk about that through the course of the show. And I think we're going to have Ben Tate on this show, not today, but at some point this week, and we look forward to getting more from him. But I think that's a really good signing. Oh, by the way, I forgot maybe the most important thing, because I am wearing a green shirt.
Happy St. Patty.
You got yours on, too. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Megan Rock,
who is not wearing any green at all. This is a red sort of black combo. What's up with that, Megan? Oh, you got some. Isn't there something on your eyes that's green? No, that's blue, isn't it? I thought you were going there.
Megan Rock, how is there no green in your wardrobe today?
What's up?
To be honest with you, I don't own anything green. I just don't.
And you just couldn't go out there and put. I've seen.
I have a Kiss Me, I'm Irish shirt, but I don't think that's appropriate for like.
See, there's the professional. Very. I'm
so,
proud of you.
That's. To keep it professional.
That's it. You are.
You said that just to get him off your back. I don't believe that story for one second. That was. She's like, what can I say that'll get Vic completely on my side in an instant?
I'm on her side in an
instant.
Totally. Anyway, so happy St. Patty's Day to everybody and enjoy it. I know parade and such going on today. Weather could. It's sunny, but it could be a little warmer, a lot warmer. But we got that going for us. All right. And to talk more about Ben Tate, we're going to have John McClain from the Houston Chronicle. He'll be with us at 2:30. I just think, again, really good signing. I mentioned about the fit and then the price. I do think this showed, from the Browns standpoint, a smart way of getting a higher-end player and taking advantage of a market that was depressed. Running backs are not in premium mode in terms of what teams will spend or have to spend to get them. Browns knew this. They focused on Tate. I think Tate understood this as well. He had other visits to take, but the Browns recruited him well and put together a deal that was something that he could accept. But more importantly, it seems as if they have found a player that does want to be here along with the other players that they've acquired. I think that's been the common theme with all of the free agents that they've signed. They all are engaged with being part of the Browns, and I think that's a good thing. Another big story today, Teddy Bridgewater, your guy, Louisville quarterback, had his pro day at Louisville. We're going to get some details on that from Jody Demling, Cardinal Authority at Scout.com. It's a publication that covers the Louisville Cardinals. We'll get some details from that. The reviews have been mixed, I guess mostly negative, though. Mike Mayock from NFL Network, we've got some sound from him. We'll get into that during the course of the show. Called it average at best. I'm surprised. I don't, first of all, a bad pro day by Teddy Bridgewater or anybody doesn't mean I give up on the guy's prospect, on the guy being a really good NFL prospect. However, I'm surprised. I thought a pro day would be the day where he would absolutely be at his very best.
Yeah, it sounds like Teddy Bridgewater, and I saw it, didn't look as sharp as you'd expect. I thought it was interesting that he threw without a glove on when he threw with a glove on all season long. I don't know what the story is with that, and I know some people are looking into it. We'll get that. Your guy, Gil Brandt, not as down on it as some other people's. Right. And just to put a little context, Cam Newton had a bad pro day. Jamarcus Russell had the best pro day in the history of pro days. Yep. I don't know that there's a ton of stock put in them, but it does give you, for a guy who's known for his consistency, his accuracy, his precision, and I still very much believe in my man Theodore, but it does make you wonder if, you know, in a situation where, as you say, everything should have gone perfectly and it didn't, it just gives you a little bit of pause. It gives you a little bit of, you know, that's not what I expected to see today.
Right, and you got to find out a little more about that. I don't think you need to research it to the hilt that you research all the other pieces of the puzzle, primarily the game tape that you have of him, the grades that you apply to him when you study that tape. And I think that's the biggest thing that the Browns and any team will go off of when they evaluate Teddy Bridgewater. But this is something that you just said it, that why was it sideways today a little bit? Let's get to the bottom of that and let's find out. And they will. I mean, or at least they'll get an answer of some sort. You mentioned the glove, and I think that's an interesting kind of part of the discussion to see what maybe prompted him to do away with the glove for this particular workout. But I just think in a controlled setting, that's when he would be at his best. And he didn't run particularly well. What was it, a 4.78 40?
People were actually happy with that.
Was that okay?
I thought that for whatever reason.
Yeah, his movement and athleticism are other parts of the questions around him, only because, again, you can be he's going to primarily be a pocket guy, but you want to also know that he can move because of the slight build that he has, the narrow shoulders, the narrow hips. And that's something Gil Brandt pointed out to me, too, in a conversation. I brought up narrow shoulders. He said, that doesn't worry me as much as narrow hips with a player, and his are kind of narrow. So he says just the ability to add the sufficient weight and muscle and turn into maybe somebody who would be a little more durable or able to withstand those hits that he's going to get in the NFL.
Right. If there's one thing, though, when you do go through the tape, he's taken some big hits and gotten right back up every single time. So that is good. It certainly was not what was expected today. And, you know, we'll see what impact, if any, that has come early May when the draft is held, how that matters with Teddy Bridgewater. But, you know, it was a day that I'm sure Teddy Bridgewater wanted to come out of as being a no-news day, and now people are going to make, in my opinion, mountains out of molehills.
Sure.
But at the same time,
it's content.
Because it's content, sure, of course. It is something to be fun to be talking about. According to Gil Brandt, by the way, for a guy who has struggled with his accuracy at the pro day, he completed 57 of his 65 passes ranging all over the field, and two of those were dropped. So really 59 out of 65, so six misses, where you could make the case that there should be none in a pro day. You can make that case. But he didn't look as crisp as he looked on tape to me. And yeah, you wonder if this team, which I think we can all agree now, has gotten better. It filled two holes that it created. Now it finally addressed a real hole in the signing of Ben Tate and basically erased a problem. Tomorrow is the deadline for Andrew Hawkins to come aboard as the slot receiver, which would, again, fill a hole there. And the Bengals have till tomorrow to match that offer for the Browns, and I'm assuming they will take it down to the last possible minute to either say yes or no, just to be, because that's the way things are going to go.
Sure.
But this is a team now that, you know, you just wonder, if Teddy Bridgewater comes out and blows it out, does that get them more excited about taking a quarterback at four? Or is this a team, and is this a front office now under Ray Farmer that's going to maybe think a little bit more about the Seattle mold in terms of getting everything in place and plugging a quarterback, whether that be Brian Hoyer, whether that be a veteran, whether it be a later quarterback pick, and saying, listen, if we have 21 of the other 22 spots locked down, even though this is the most important, maybe we can get a guy in there who can thrive in that environment.
It could be a way they go. I have to feel, after last week's just blowing up of the quarterback position, saying goodbye to Brandon Whedon and 10 minutes later, Jason Campbell. I mean, on the same day. That just doesn't happen too often, and it's not a small thing when it does. To say goodbye to those two guys and basically put yourself in a position where you are dramatically reconfiguring yourself at quarterback, I think opens the door to that position being addressed pretty aggressively this offseason. Now,
for sure.
Does it have to be in the draft? No, it doesn't have to be in the draft. I think we both agree it's going to be in the draft in one form or another.
Right.
If it's not the fourth overall pick, it's somewhere in the first or second round. And then there's that possibility of getting a veteran player from another team. I don't know that it looks as promising that guy could be Matt Schaub as has been speculated. He is still a Houston Texan.
We can talk with John McClain about that as well.
We're going to get into that with John McClain. But something's going to happen, obviously, in addition to having Brian Hoyer here, in addition to having Alex Tanny here.
Correct.
They're going to do a lot more with that position. I think it means get aggressive in the draft and go after the guy that you love, whoever that may be. By the way, Blake Bortles' pro day will be Wednesday. That's another one to keep an eye on, the Central Florida quarterback who some people think could still be the top overall pick of the draft. That's where I'm sort of mocking him out, and Nathan and I will have our complete mocks done in the course of this week, and we'll share those with you. Those will be driven by Liberty Ford, by the way. They're going to sponsor our mocks and all our pre-draft coverage here. And another thing I neglected to say, Jim Donovan will join us at the bottom of the hour. You're going to hear from Jim at about 1:30, the play-by-play voice of the Cleveland Browns and the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. We'll get his thoughts on Teddy Bridgewater and the quarterback position. But I think if you're Brian Hoyer, you feel good that you're here and Whedon and Campbell are gone. It's maybe a reaffirmation that the new people in charge like you and like you, if not as much as the people who brought you here, Joe Banner, Michael Lombardi, they may like you enough to say you're the candidate to be the starter. But I think you've got to start feeling some pressure because you know with those two guys gone, both of those guys gone, Whedon and Campbell, that the competition is going to ramp up. It could be two quarterbacks coming aboard from the draft, but at the very least, two new quarterbacks minimum are joining this football team.
I think there's going to be a veteran, and I think there's going to be a rookie, or there will be two rookies. And I think that the way that we're going to get, I think, a pretty fair insight into the thought process of this front office when you look at who it is that they bring in before the draft. Because if they bring in a guy that they feel can legitimately compete with Brian Hoyer to be the starter, it takes a little bit of the onus off to draft a quarterback at number four. If they bring in a guy that you think is more suited, say a Rex Grossman, that is probably best suited to be the third quarterback, help teach the Kyle Shanahan offense, that says I think they're going to look at a quarterback, maybe not necessarily four, but 26 or 35,
right,
somewhere with those first three picks. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Today was indeed my man Theodore's pro day, and as we do know, it didn't go as smoothly as people may have hoped. Does that matter to me? Are you asking me if I am off the Theodore bandwagon? No, I am not. Yeah, but at the same time,
I was going to take more than that to get you off.
Of course, but at the same time, it brings in the question, at least into my mind, because and not that it changes how I feel about him in general, but specifically as it relates to how this team is going to construct itself. You know, you get the sense that if there's a quarterback at four they love, that maybe they go that way. But you also start to get the sense and get the feel that the way that they're assembling this team is that they want to load it up as good and get as many talented guys in here, and maybe they feel that they can do that and win with Brian Hoyer. Maybe
right.
They can and buy some time there. There's an idea that's been popping into my head that, you know, and when we do our mock drafts, I'm not going to incorporate this in there because it's too convoluted, but if there isn't somebody that the Browns feel at number four is that much of a game changer to them, given the strength of this draft and the strength of future drafts, maybe the Browns are a candidate to maybe move from 4 to 10, say take a Mike Evans, put him opposite Josh Gordon, pick up a 2015 first, give Brian Hoyer and a veteran a shot with a late rookie, and if it doesn't pan out, you have two firsts and 15 to go after a Winston or a Hundley or a Mariota.
I'm inclined to think something like that's going to happen, some machination where they can get in position to take an outstanding receiver but also get a quarterback they like to compete this year. Yes, could happen, and I'm inclined to think that scenario. I don't have it completely figured out in my mind, and we'll see how it's hard to project those things. I wouldn't do it in a mock draft either.
Right.
But I can see that easily happening because I don't think this is a draft where you necessarily go by chalk at four and say that is where I would have a top quarterback rated. I think today might have been a reinforcement of the idea that there is no slam dunk guy that you want to take in the top five at quarterback. Because Teddy Bridgewater, the argument was the most pro ready of anybody, and he still could be. By the way, everything you've loved about him, everything I like about the guy could stand and doesn't change because of one pro day workout. But it may have been just a reminder that if you're looking for greatness from this quarterback class and that guy was the best, you still might have to wait for next year, possibly. And we'll see how Blake Bortles does on Wednesday. Maybe Blake Bortles, if he knocks it off out of the park, could do a couple of things. He could, not number one, reinforce the idea that maybe Houston would want him at the top, and it puts the Browns in position to check in with your guy or whoever else they might look at number four. Or
your guy. Maybe they say we want a Ben Roethlisberger built guy in the AFC North.
And maneuver their way to get into something like that. Or just sit there and take him. So we'll see how this all unfolds. I think it just makes it more intriguing and more fun to kind of talk about, honestly.
And to me, it all comes down to this as it relates to this draft. And this is how I feel as a Browns fan and somebody who gets to be in the building.
Yeah.
There is a different feel here in this building, I'd say, with this current regime, and it's exciting, and I think it was very palpable with Carlos Dansby coming through here, with Dante Whitner coming through here, Ben Tate coming through here. You get a sense that something is being built to with a very clear plan in mind with the way that they want to go about things, which to me is exciting, and it's a plan that, at least for Browns fans, because you talked about this, and that's why I want, some of the people think that the way things went down at the end of last year wasn't fair. There clearly is an emphasis on 2014.
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. Because this, you get signals from how teams go about free agency. And the clear signals from it's almost been a week. It'll be a week tomorrow, right? Has been these 6 days has definitely been to the tune of, we want to be pretty good, really good this year, as good as we can be, while also mixing in the idea of being better
and
maybe
building
the following year and building. But every... with Dansby, with Whitner, and throw in Ben Tate, I'm looking at those acquisitions as two-year impacts that you're looking at 14 and 15. So it's a short-looking approach to trying to be really good. And it's not – I mean, it doesn't preclude this team from having long-term success. The draft can bring that. But I think it's a methodical and realistic sense of, hey, Mike Pettine, Ray Farmer, we don't have time to go through another 4 or 5 win season. They don't give you that kind of time here in most places, but especially not in this place.
And the genius of it is that you're drafting 10 people. You're drafting 5 in the first 3 rounds. And we heard Ray Farmer talk about, you know, that he wants to get competition in positions where you may get a free agent and a young guy there. The beauty is, I think this team is going to learn so much from guys like Carlos Dansby, Dante. Even Ben Tate was there with Houston, where they were very successful for 3 of his 4 years. And then you're going to have this rookie class, I think, very much poised to take over this team. You're going to, if they draft well this year, this is a team that's going to be set up short-term and long-term. That's why this draft is, in fact, so important for the Cleveland Browns. Jim Donovan coming up at the bottom of this hour. We got a couple stories about the latest in free agency. Unfortunate situation with the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, and more when Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, returns here on ESPN 850 WKNR. I'm